I think we're beginning. Yeah. Okay. Good evening, everybody. Good evening. Give everybody a little a respite. Yeah. Yeah. Hi. We'll give everybody a brief respite from all the busy cleaning. Or hope, you know, maybe get a little motivation to go back and attack. I won't say what the crumbs. Actually, one of the interesting things, and when we're cleaning the house, we're preparing to create a place that we can have a Seder and to eat our matzahs. And it's strange to find out when we read through Chumash that the first place that we find that matzahs are mentioned is not in Sefer Shemos. Although at the Pesach Seder, when we lift up the matzahs and we display them, we ask, matzahzu, this matzah, al shum ma, why are we all circling around and celebrating these matzahs? What are they here for? So it's mentioned over there in the Haggadah that the reason why we're involved with the matzahs is because what happened was when Klal Yisrael was leaving Mitzrayim, so it didn't have a chance to bake sufficiently, and it was baked on the backs, and it's symbolic or it's representative of the idea that we left Bechi Pazon, we left in great haste, in a big hurry. And then we take a look in Chumash, and we see where's the first time that matzahs are mentioned. Most people don't see it the first time, because we're too busy distracted by other things that are going on in that particular scene. It happens to be a very, very busy and active corner of Chumash. We find that the Malachim had just left the tent of Avram Avinu, and they had promised to Sarah Imenu, they had promised to Avram with Sarah listening by the other side of the tent, they said, Shuvah Shuv, next year we're coming back, Shuvah Shuv Alecha, Keis Chaya, we came here, we're going to come back and visit you again next year. Interesting idea of Malachim coming to visit. And we'll see, it's a special time. V'hinei ben l'Sara, ishtecha. And there's going to be a ben, there's going to be a child, which is going to be born to Sarah. So the Malachim said, next year at this time, they're coming back, and there's going to be a child for Sarah. Of course, Sarah laughed within herself. And then the Malachim went from there, they left from the tent of Sodom, they went from the pillar of Chesed, of Avram Avinu's home. And they went down to judge and to take care of Sodom, two of the three Malachim. And Lot comes out to greet them. And they said, no, we'll sleep in the street. And the Pasuk says, Vayistar Bam, he forces them, Ma'od, he puts a great deal of pressure on them. V'yasur Alav, and then they said, okay, they gave in. Right? They came to him. Halach Ma'anya, right? Come join us. We're taking in guests tonight. V'yavo El Beso, they came to his house. V'yashlehem Mishna, he made for them a party. Umatzos Afa, and he baked for them matzos. He baked matzos for them. V'yochelu, and they ate the matzos. So Lot served the Malachi matzos. And Rashi says two words over here, two short words, that's it. Six letters, Rashi. He says, Umatzos Afa, he baked matzos, Rashi says, Pesachaya, who's Pesach? So here we find that Lot, it's amazing, Lot is making matzahs. Lot is involved with making matzahs 401 years before the Geula. 401 years. Because next year at that time, Yitzchak is born. And it was 400 years from the birth of Yitzchak until the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So here it's 1 year because they said next year this time we're coming back. It was Erev Pesach. They have Avram Avinu who's running. It looks like our Pesach also. He's running around. Right? And that night, Lot picks up. He's secluded inside of his house, just like we seclude ourselves inside of our house. Then he makes an appeal to his sons-in-law. They look at him laughingly. Come on, you must be kidding. And then he manages to escape, and he runs out in great haste the next morning. Pesach Chayah. And as soon as he gets out of the city limits, so he looks behind him, or he's not allowed to look behind him, his wife looks behind him. But lo and behold, behind him is a giant mushroom cloud. And the place goes up in smoke, and Lot escapes. Pesach, it was Pesach. So we pick up the matzahs on Pesach night, and we say, matzahzu or shumah, why are we eating these matzahs? We said, because our ancestors, when they left Mitzrayim, they didn't have a chance for it to bake, and that's why we're eating matzahs. So what's the point of the matzahs that Lot was involved with 401 years before there was ever even a Yetzias Mitzrayim? What's that all about? So what I'd like to do is maybe take a look. Tonight we titled our discussion a question of four. Now don't let me leave the room, okay, until we find out what's happening with Lot and the matzahs 401 years before Yetzias Mitzrayim. But we know at the Pesach Seder that the dominant number of the evening, and I'm not a numerologist, I'm not into numbers. For some reason, even when I listen to a number on an answering machine, I have to listen 7 times, I have to play it over and over again. The numbers go through me. You ask my wife, when I go to buy things, and they tell me what it costs, the numbers go through me. I don't listen to the numbers, you know. I look and see whether it's, you know, we need it or not, and then I pay for it. Do you pay that much for it? So I'm not listening to numbers so much. But on Pesach night, it's hard to ignore that there's a number, which is more important. It seems to keep on repeating itself over and over again more than all other numbers. And that number is 4. Right? What's the business of 4? We have the Arba Kosos. We have the Arba Bonim. We have the 4 children. We have the Fiakashas. We have the 4 questions. Right? We can, there's all the other implied 4s, but we go back and we're singing at the end of the night, those who manage to stay awake, for the end of the Seder, so we're also singing at the end. Echad mi yodeya, shtay mi yodeya, shlosh mi yodeya, who knows 1, who knows 2, who knows 3, and we'll get to 4, arbar mi yodeya. What does 4 mean over there? What's the arbar? Arba imahos, the four mothers. So Pesach has something to do, there's something about Pesach that has to do with the number 4, that somehow the mothers are playing an important role over here. Remember, one of my rebbeim said very beautifully, a very nice idea. He said, we have a pasuk in Mishlei that says like this. It says, Shema Bini, right? Everybody's familiar with the pasuk, Shema Bini. I wouldn't sing it for you. I spoke at a dinner last week. My son's yeshiva, and I said, what can I do not to embarrass you? He says, number 1, don't sing, right? And number 2, don't speak Yiddish. Okay, those are my two commands. And I succeeded in not doing both of them. And, you know, I still probably embarrassed him in some way or some other way. So he says Shema Bini Musar Avicha Ve'Alpitosh Torah Semecha. So the implication of the pasuk Shema Bini is that Shema Bini Musar Avicha. In order to achieve the heights, in order to reach the heights of what the father expects, so it requires active listening. It's an interesting thing that here we live in an American culture, a strange thing in American culture, where we never had such mass assimilation like we have. I think the study from maybe like 15 years ago, and it hasn't improved since, is that of the 5.5 million Jews in America, it's interesting, it's been 5.5 million Jews in America for the last 50 years. Right? That means that the population has not grown, although the population of the United States has increased from like 200 and 180 million to almost 300 million. Right? But the number of Jews stays static at 5.5 million Jews. So that's an amazing thing. But of those 5.5 million Jews in America, most Gentiles, by the way, think that there's 50 million and 60 million Jews. It's amazing. We're not a minority. I always find that amazing, that we're not a minority. We're 5.5 million Jews. Of the 5.5 million Jews in America, 3.5, okay, I don't like to deal with statistics. Statistics only describe, they don't proscribe behavior, because we never know what can happen to a Jew. A Jew is a dynamic creature. But of the 5.5 million Jews in America, 3.5 million Jews have no synagogue affiliation. Forget about Reform, Conservative, nothing. They have nothing. Zero. See, that means more than 60% don't belong to anything. And yet, Hanukkah and Pesach, there's more than 75% people, Jews, are keeping some kind of celebration. That's an amazing thing. Why is everybody so busy, so osik in Pesach? You say, you know, Hanukkah, they're lighting they're lighting because they're lighting, we're light, zu keneged zu, you know, zele umuze oseloki. But, you know, there's nothing compelling about the Easter egg, you know, that makes the Jew want to switch his dishes around and eat some flat, stale crackers and invite his whole family. What's going on over here? What's the common denominator between Pesach and Hanukkah? And it could be basically like this. That pasuk, Shema Bini Musar Avicha Ve'Alpitosh Torah Semecha, that when it comes to being obedient and achieving the Musar Avicha, the person has to strive to a very high, he has to listen to his father. Listen, Shema, I want you to listen. I want you to listen. You have to listen to me, the father says. And if you're going to listen to me, you're going to become something. You know, you have to strive to become something. Shema Bini, listen. There's an active listening. Ve'Alpitosh Torah Semecha, but the Torah Semecha, don't abandon it. That means in order to maintain the Torah Simcha, just don't fumble it. Don't lose it. Don't break it. Right? If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Don't break it. Because automatically you're born to a Jewish mother, you're a Jew. That's it. You got it in you. Somehow on Hanukkah, we're representing over here the Jew is coming in, even as a minimalist, he's coming in on the floor level and he says, I'm a Jew. And on Pesach also, the Jew somehow comes and he has to represent himself because he's showing, even if it's minimally, the person is showing some allegiance to Yiddishkeit. Anybody who's a Jew is going to somehow find his way to a Pesach Seder because that's the time when we show our allegiance, we identify ourselves as Jews. It's a very important time. Shema b'ni, Musar v'icha v'altitah shor samecha. And therefore, there's no contrivance. You don't have to belong to a synagogue in order to come to a Pesach Seder, you know, to get an invite. It's an amazing thing. It's not happening with any kind of contrivance of you get a notice from the synagogue, or it's happening, or the youth director is organizing it, or that it's coming from some central organization that you have to donate money. It's nothing like that is happening. It's because your mother told you that you have to be there. You came from a mother, and you came from a family, and you have a family, and you have some kind of, you grew up in some kind of Jewish environment that lets you know that you're Jewish. So those people are going to invite you to a Pesach Seder, and if you have siblings and friends, or you find some kind of invite, you find yourself in some kind of a congregation of Jews in a house, in a home setting. It's coming through the home. It's a home thing. So therefore, it's a connection of a natural connection of generations and generations of that's coming through the Jewish home. It's flowing through the Jewish family. So Hirsch says an amazing thing. He says that's why we find it the Pesach Seder. He says if only we would read this. This would be understood in the rest of the world. He says an amazing thing. He says you find where the Jewish people configured, where the Jewish people at the time when the redemption is taking place. Where do we find everybody congregated, the whole Jewish nation? So I don't know what they portray in the movie, right? But in the book, the way we read it and the way we understand it, where were the Jewish people on the night before Yetzias Mitzrayim, the night before that great moment of Exodus, stepping onto the great stage of history? Where were the Jewish people? Where were we congregated? In some stadium with Moshe Rabbeinu giving some great pronouncements and speeches and oratory. What was going on over there? No. Everybody was sitting where? In the home. When they came down to Mitzrayim, it was Eilu Shemos B'nei Yisrael Haboyim Mitzrayim Eis Yaakov Ish Ubeso. The people came down in a household unit. They survived in Mitzrayim, household units. And then finally came time for the Geula Shleima, for the redemption. And then finally, where was everybody sitting the night before? They're sitting in their homes, having a barbecue in the home. Sitting around and talking, schmoozing, everybody reading together. And therefore, the home and the sacred connection between generation, linking between generation to generation, is the important duty, it's the important function of what's happening on Pesach night. That's it. That makes the whole thing flow. Because it connects the Jew with the past, and it connects the whole past with the future. It's not just we're making a Pesach Seder. It's a connection of generations. And therefore, one of the sacred duties that we have at the Pesach Seder is the mitzvah, the Higarat Levincha, the Yom Ahu, you have to tell it over to your child on that night. And it could be for that reason that the Haggadah goes through a whole rhythm, or all the Haggadah turns itself and turns everything up on its head. And it does things that we normally do in an abnormal way. And it goes through all kinds of different, and it goes through all kinds of different functions just in order to do what the Chazal tells us, is just to prompt a question from the child. Just to be a heker l'tinokas, in order to create some kind of a recognizable, to create a learning device that the kids should say, you know, hey, what's going on over here tonight? The whole Pesach Seder goes out of Seder. It's order, and it goes out of order. To do what? In order to get the kid to ask a question. And we all know what the question is. We all know the four questions. But the reason why we wash our hands, we make Kiddush, we wash our hands, and we're expecting our olfactory glands and all of our Pavlovian responses, we're expecting fluffy loaves with raisin stuff, you know, to be sitting in front of us, and then we reveal the matzahs. Suddenly, you know, something inside of us sinks, and we say, "Hey, manish tana halayl hazeh mikol halos. Why is this night different from all other nights?" You know, we look around, we see that the child gets some kind of a different reaction over here. In certain schools, they practice not to tell the kids too much sometimes, so that the real drama of the Pesach Seder should have an impact on their eyes and their ears. You know, that doesn't happen in most places. You know, come loaded with Torahs and all kinds of different, you know, it's also good. A lot of functions have been taken over by the home functions have been taken over by school. Necessary. But now we know we have four questions. We look at the four questions, we see that the four questions are really only one question with four observations. And the one question we said before is Manish Tana Halayla Zemikol Halilos. And we have four observations. It could be because of the sacred mitzvah of the Higarat Levincha B'Yom Ahu, because we have to tell it over to your child. It says individually, you have to tell it over to your individual child. that the Torah goes into this, looks like a pop psychology lesson, and starts to tell us, Neged Arba Banim, Keneged Arba Banim, Divrei Torah. The Torah speaks about four children. Right? What does it say? Echad Chocham, Ve'echad Rasha, Ve'echad Tam, Ve'echad She'ena Yidei Yilishol. It tells us the attitudes and how to look for it in order to deliver the right medicine for the right child. Because you dare not give the wrong medicine to the right to the wrong person, just like a pharmacist, right, or a doctor. Can't prescribe the same medicine to everybody. Right? The kid comes in and he's anxious to know, and he wants to know the answer to certain questions. We'll speak about the four sons in a few moments. So we'll see that you can't give the wrong medicine to the wrong person. If somebody comes and they're interested in knowing, you can't hack their shin up and hit them in the teeth. And somebody else who's a little bit, he wants to push the Seder away, he wants to kick over the cups of wine, he wants to disrupt the Seder, he can't feed him information. Give him a Sefer to learn. And give him some lumbus. He's not interested in it. You have to give him some other medicine. He needs a certain medicine. And the one who does not ask, he needs a particular medicine. He has to be warmed up in his way. And as for the one who says mazos, the simple one, so he also, we have to listen well, the parent has to listen well and try to figure out where is this child holding. It's interesting, there's four that are mentioned over there. Question is, it looks like, hey, four, couldn't there be more? The truth is, if we think about it for a moment, these four are really four types. There's only four types of reactions. The Haggadah says interesting things. The Haggadah says, makes a seemingly an outrageous statement. It says like this. It says, Avodim hayinu lefaro b'mitzrayim. Sounds like an outrageous statement. But if you measure it against what, the people's experience, it says that we were slaves and the Kodesh Baruch Hu took us out with a biyad chazaka b'zroya natuya. Now you plant that in the 21st century over here and you tell somebody, that's what happened 3,315 years ago. Now let's see your reaction. There's only four possible reactions. Let's say, for example, a fellow would come into the university cafeteria, some university, he would have his hand tucked into his shirt like this, and he'd tell, by the way, everybody, I'm Napoleon. Right? So he's going to get four different types of reaction. Someone's going to be running up to him with a notepad and a piece of paper and say, oh, you're Napoleon? I'm doing a class on French history, and I'm glad to meet somebody who could offer me a primary source, someone I can ask questions from. Tell me, how did Marie Antoinette, now I'm going to start to ask you some important interview questions. Okay, that's one reaction. Another reaction is someone is going to come along and someone's going to go run out the door. They're going to say, let me get out of here. This guy obviously just escaped from an insane asylum. Because if he's walking around thinking he's Napoleon lived, 300 years ago, let me get out of here quick, because he's insane. Because he might be dangerous. Who knows who he's going to say he is next. Someone else who watches these opposite reactions is going to take a look and say, he's watching, his head is dodging both ways. He's going to step forward and say, wait a second, a little cautious. I don't know whether I should run away or ask the question, but I'm going to come up cautiously and say, who's Napoleon? Right? Did he invent a pastry or something like that? Who's the guy Napoleon? And then there's some other fellow, he's sitting in the corner, and said, John, what do you say? And he's looking up, he's sitting doodling on a piece of paper in the corner, stirring his yogurt and saying, no. Okay, let him be who he wants to be. That's none of my business. Whoever he thinks he wants to be, let him say who he wants to be. I got other problems, I'm worried about who I am. I don't have to worry about who he is. It's not our business. And so he ignores it. It has to be either you want to come close to it, or you want to run away from it, you have a strong opinion, or you have, from having no opinion, you either want to know or don't know. So you see that really these four children fall into two lines, because we see that the Chochem and the Rasha, the wise and the wicked are not two opposites from each other. What's Chacham and Rasha? Chacham is wise. Rasha is wicked. Right? It's apples and oranges. They're skewed lines. It's not Chacham and Tipesh. Right? It's Chacham and Rasha. So why Chacham and Rasha opposite each other? Why do they stand opposed to each other? They're not opposites. And Tom, Veshein, and Elisha also don't stand opposed to each other. So why are they parked next to each other? Why are they compared to each other? And the truth is that the first two of the Arba Banim, the first two of the four sons, really describe this two types of people that know. And there's two reactions to someone that knows. And there's two types of reactions to somebody who doesn't know something. If somebody knows something, sometimes a person knows something and they want to know more. It stimulates to know more. When you finish learning, sometimes you want to go to the library, you want to go to the bookstore, and you want to get even more books, because learning stimulates learning. Mitzvah gerer es mitzvah, the person wants to grow. And there's another type of personality, he knows something, but he's not living up to what he knows. And therefore, it bothers him. His conscience is grating away inside. And inside, the person is chalashing. They're getting weaker. They come to the Pesach Seder, and they can't face it. It makes them upset to be there. So So they can't live with this disparity about where they are and where they ought to be. So it can't be that there's a problem with me. So you know what? I'm going to shake the table. I'm going to try to knock over the cups. I'm going to try to disturb the Seder if I possibly can. Because I have to destroy Yiddishkeit. I have to push Yiddishkeit away. So he gets a special medicine. The first one, the Chacham, he needs the medicine. He needs Torah. So we have to feed him. We have to feed him Torah. The second one comes along and he has a different approach. And he says, I want to shake the Pesach Seder. I want to destroy Yiddishkeit. I want to push everything away. And he told me, you can't push Yiddishkeit away. You can't just, if a person goes against the western wall, the coastal, and he wants to push against the coastal, he may think he's pushing the coastal away, but what's he pushing away? He's pushing himself away. You're pushing yourself out. He's pushing himself out. We don't even address him directly. You can't derail a Kodesh Baruch Hu's plan. You can only push yourself away from the plan. You can only push yourself out of the Seder. You can't destroy the Seder. You can't destroy the Seder of the universe. That's it. You're living in a non-reality. And the next two, Shanaday Elisha, the Tom doesn't know, but he has the courage to step forward and say, who is Napoleon? What happened? Well, tell me, why are you arguing? What is the argument about? He wants to know. And the fourth one, the one who doesn't know how to ask, so he's stuck. Because he's afraid to know. For whatever reason, right? Either he doesn't want to exit his comfort zone, or he's afraid to be found out. Don't mind the man behind the curtain. He's afraid to be found out ignorant, so he sort of buries his head in the sand like the ostrich. And he pretends, you know, that he's enjoying, for however long it lasts, the bliss of ignorance. He enjoys it for that period of time. But the bliss of ignorance doesn't last long until the person has to pick his head out of the sand. So he chooses to remain. And he needs a certain medicine also. He has to be warmed up. You have to let him know that it's okay to experiment. It's okay to try. It's okay to know something and to not feel that you're going to feel guilty that you didn't do it immediately. Learn about it. You might, and then later on, if you want to try it, you might like it. Don't worry about it. Living with a fellow for a number of years, and finally, he took it. He says, "I said you took the earring out of your ear." He says, 3 weeks ago." He says, "I thought you noticed that." I said, "No, I didn't notice." He took it out of his ear. He says, "You were staring at me the other day." I said, "I wasn't staring at you. I didn't even notice. I didn't realize it until just now." He says, 3 weeks I had it out." He says, "You never told me to take it out." I said, "That's right. You know, until you felt comfortable to do it. What does it help if I tell you to do it? I can't tell you what to do. You got to make the choices." That's okay. When you make the choice, when you're ready to make the choice, so that it's your choice, and you succeed. So the premise over here of the Arba Bonin, that the four sons are really representing the full gamut of reactions. The previous Lubavitch Rebbe had an approach also similar to the American exile. He said the American exile. He says that the grandfather comes over from Europe. He's someone who knew how to learn. He's somebody who knew Torah, knew Yiddishkeit, and he has his svarim, and he has Shulchan Aruch, and he's living up to Yiddishkeit. And his grandson, he comes to America, and his son, they settle in Lower East Side someplace, and the son now is a little bit embarrassed. The grandfather comes out, and he says, "Yankel," he calls his son Yankel, and Yankel's sitting over there now with his, you know, cabbie cap, something he's trying to disguise his Yiddishkeit. He says, "You know, Jack, Dad, you know, and don't let the Italian boys and the Irish ones hear that, you know, that's how you're talking, shh, you know." And he goes to Columbia University, and he breaks away. He's got a dispute between his father. On one hand, he loves him, he adores him. On the other hand, he feels he's embarrassed by the ethnicity that chases him. Here in America, he has to melt in. And then the next generation, his son, the son of a father that went to Columbia University, you know, swallowed up all these ideals. So I'm just painting a caricature over here. So now he looks and he sees a dispute between his father and his grandfather, and he wants to know what's going on over here, Dad. You know, why are you two arguing? Grandpa's a lovely man, and he's not as sophisticated as you, but I see there's a certain depth and warmth about him, and a certain deep comfort that he has that you don't have. Who's right and who's wrong over here? And of course, this fellow has a child, the next generation, so he doesn't even know, he didn't see his grandfather, he didn't see his great-grandfather now. And so he's disconnected. And he just lost in the blue yonder, and he doesn't have any ideas about, you know, what he's missing or about what was left. He has maybe not even the same residue of the taste, of the flavor of the chicken soup, of the matzahs that were left from behind. And therefore, he runs into the he doesn't bother to ask a question. He doesn't know what it was that was left behind. And so there's a little point of assimilation. So that's the last generation, because after that, the person either climbs back to his grandfather, he goes back all the way. And he finds his way back to his great-grandfather, to the one who knew how to learn. He finds his way back to Yiddishkeit, or the next generation is, he's gone. That's why there's 5.5 million Jews in America for the last 50 years. Not because anybody knocked us off, because they walked away. They go from the fourth son out the door, and there is no fifth son. There is no fifth generation. So when we take a look at these four sons over here, it's interesting, we line them up. Let's take a few moments and line them up with the four questions. That's what I wanted to spend the next few moments doing. Right? What are the four questions? We said before, the four questions are really one question. One question is, Manish Tana Halayla Azad Mikol Halalos. I was the youngest in the family. I used to ask the question every year. I used to stand on the chair in front of everybody and recite it. I never knew what it was saying. I never knew what it meant. Later on, I start to think, what was it that I was saying all those years? I used to get a nice prize for it. Okay, very nice. But what was I saying? Why was I saying it? Why do I want my children to say it? What does it mean, Manish Tana Halayla Azad Mikol Halalos? It's one question really with four different observations that it's plugged into those four questions. What's the first question? The first question we can line up with the first of the four sons. The first of the four sons, he wants to know something, right? That's what we said before, right? The first of the four sons, he says, Ma Eidus Vachukim Mishpatim Asher Tzivah Hashem Elokeinu Otchem. He wants to know, what are these? I want to know details about laws. I want to know how does it work? Dad, teach me. I'm here to learn. And therefore, we can intone the question, Manish Tana Halayla Azeh, according to the way, the Chacham, according to the way, the wise one, the one that wants to be Moses Chacham, that wants to learn, the one that wants to grow, the one who wants to get the most out of the Pesach Seder, that ideal child. We can intone it the way that he would say this question. By the way, parenthetically, the Maharal says an interesting thing. So we don't end up putting everybody and different people into different typological castes. I was never interested in psychological typology. I don't like it too much. The Maharal says a fascinating idea. He says like this. He says that it says, how come, he asks, how come it says before each one of the children? He says, Keneged Arba Bonim Divrei Torah, it says, Echad Chacham, Echad Rosha, Echad Tam, Echad She'en Yodei Lishol. He says, how come it says by each one, Echad, Echad, Echad? How come there's, it doesn't have to say that? The Haggadah doesn't have to say that. It could have said, about four sons, Chacham, Tam. It says, Echad, this one, Echad, this one, Echad, this one. So the Maharal asked that question. Great question. And he says, the answer is, he says, because it's really Echad. It's one kid. It's one person. It's one personality. It's all, they're all within each one of us. There's a part of us that wants to know. And there's a part of us that loves to know. And there's certain areas that every Jew, there's some areas that he likes it, and he finds that delicious and geschmack, and he wants to grow in that area. We may be more dominant, or someone may be dominant at one point in their life in one area more than the other. There's another area where we feel, that I know it, but I wish I'd never learned it before, because it just makes me crazy, because I can't do it, you know? You learn the laws of Hilchos Lashon Hara, I'm not saying it, you know, and you blow it enough times, and then you feel like, you know, it only makes me, oily yitzri, it makes me feel guilty, and then I wish I could delete it from my memory, but I can't, I know it, I struggle with it, and after a while, the person feels, it creates a certain bitterness, a certain tension within, and a grinding of the gears. And then there's certain things that we don't know anything about. Suddenly you turn the page, you look into a safe, and you say, wow, I never knew about this. There's a whole new subject over here. And you're interested to know about it, and that subject is going to become your best friend for the next 50 years. Wow. And you just discover that. I never knew about it. Now suddenly I'm interested in the subject. I'm into tefillah. I never thought about tefillah before. Suddenly I'm into chovos levavos. I never thought about chovos levavos. Oh, gavaltik. I never saw the sefer tehillim. I looked and I said, I saw a parish. It turned me on. I learned svasemas, v'chassidus. Suddenly you get turned on. And there's a whole other area. They say, look, I don't want to know about that. No, because it's going to be mechayev me. It's going to obligate me. Don't go there. Someone's going to show you. I don't want to see it. So all those four attitudes are really within the same personality. The things we know, we don't, when we want to know more, things we wish we hadn't known, and things that we're looking to explore, we're willing to explore, and other things that we'd like to bury, wish we hadn't known. So the Maharal says it's all in one personality. It's all part of one soup within each and every one of us. And so the Arba Bonim is really, you know, is ourselves. But that having been said, there's four different ways that we're going to try to intone this question, this one question, Manish Tana Halayla Azeh Mikol Halalos. The first observation of the first of the four questions, Manish Tana Halayla Azeh, the first question, the first observation is, what is the first observation of the four questions? Is why are we tonight eating matzahs? Matzahs, the same letters as mitzvahs. This kid wants to know about mitzvahs, just like when we saw the question of the Chacham, it lines up beautifully. He wants to know, what's the story with the mitzvahs? Dad, teach me some mitzvahs. Abba, Ima, tell me some mitzvahs. And the question therefore can be read, Manish Tana Halayla Azeh Mikol Halalos. What are we supposed to learn tonight that we haven't learned before? What can we learn tonight? Nice. Manish Tana Halayla Azeh Mikol Halalos. What can we do different tonight that we haven't done before? Nishtana can be learning. Mishnah, Mishnah can be, it can be learning, the Mishnah can be changed. What can we change? How can we adjust ourselves? What can we do tonight that we haven't done before? What can we do? How can we improve? Laila is exile. We're in the exile. We're sitting in the exile. Manishtana halayla has said, what's different about this exile than previous exiles? What's the enemy to now? You have to sit in front of a committee hearing to know that we have to change and we have to adjust because the battleground has changed. Woe to the general who fought the last war, is fighting the last war now. Is it Nazis that we're looking out for? What is it? Is it assimilation? What is it? Is it annihilation? Is it assimilation? What's the enemy? Manishtana halayla, what do we have to learn? What mitzvahs are going to protect us? Abba, what do we have to do to be shown ourselves that we should remain with the Torah? Abba, what can we do? What should we learn tonight? Manishtana halayla zeh mikol halelov. And that's the shaila of the Chacham. He sits at the Pesach Seder and he says that we have to make some improvement, we have to make some changes, we have to make some adjustments. Abba, teach us, guide us, we need guidance over here. And the Abba is not just the father sitting at the table, because the Abba also is also a Ben, is also a child of the Pesach Seder. At the end of the Pesach Seder, everybody's sitting by Abba. Avinu Sheva Shemayim, Echad Mi Yodea. We're all little kid children, Chad Gad Yah. My father bought four two zuzim. We're all little children. There's no afilu kulanu chachamim, kulanu tzadikim, kulanu yodim es haTorah. Mitzvah leinu l'saper b'yisias Mitzrayim. It'd still be a mitzvah upon us. Rabbi Akiva sitting over there, and he's sitting by his father's lap also. So nobody's exempt. There's no chachamim over here. There's nobody who's superseded the need in order to reach out and say, how do we need siyata d'shmaya to survive, and we need mitzvahs. What's our mitzvahs going to be? How are we going to protect ourselves with mitzvahs? Shomer is a mitzvah. Watch the matzahs. The Chazal said, don't read matzahs, but read the mitzvahs. How is the matzahs represents the mitzvahs? What's the mitzvah nowadays? So we left with matzahs last time, but what's the mitzvah going to be this time that's going to save us? Is it limud Torah? Is it chesed? Is it tefillah? What is it? What are we going to do? How do we do it? Manishtana halayla hazem, we call halilos. That's the question of the Chacham. Isn't that great? It's kabbalistic. It's not the recital I said when I was 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. And it's so cute. Right? It's a question. It's a real question. It's an important question. And of course you've got to rush at the Pesach Seder and you have to hear his tone also. And you got to know what makes him, what drives him, and what makes him crazy. And the problem is, if you take a look at the next observation, the next of the four mitzvahs, the next of the four observations, that's the basis of the four questions, is talking about what? Maror. He's only caught up with maror. Bitterness. Right? You got a certain mindset of in Yiddishkeit where, oi, schwer zu sein Yid. It's hard to be a Jew. A lot of sighing. It's a lot of heaviness. Matzah's expensive. Everything is difficult. It's been a long exile. Then you got the bad jokes. Choose somebody else. Right, all that the oive, bloody path of the brutal path of Jewish history. It's the Holocaust. It's the Inquisition. And then that's it. All the person can see is the bloody footprints of history and say, is it worth it? Ma ha'avoda hazos lechem. What is all this work to you? Forget about it. I don't even want a piece of it. He says, and therefore he asked the question on Pesach night. With such an atonement like this, he says, "Manishtana halayla zeh mikol halelos." Not skepticism. That's okay. It's okay to ask questions. We want people to ask questions. There's a difference between asking a question and questioning. He's giving a lecture. He's not even asking a question. He's asking a rhetorical question. The rhetorical question is "Manishtana halayla zeh mikol halelos." What are we going to do different tonight? What can we do different that's going to make a difference tonight that we haven't done from previous nights? We're still in exile. What's going to be? Manishtana, what can we learn that we haven't learned before? Here we are repeating ourselves again, and we're still in exile. And nothing's happened. And nothing's improved. And nothing's changed in his mind. And we're not any closer. And so what is it? So what does it get us? And the person sits there looking at the dark lines of the painting over here, and he's bitter inside. The truth is that many times we can't blame people. Because they went through bitter experience, and they're focused on it, and they're obsessed with it. The only ones I feel like I can have a complaint against the people who didn't go through the bitter experience is only watching somebody else's bitter experience. Sitting there with lobster tails, you know, wondering, why did the Holocaust happen? Can you pass me the sauce, please? But somebody went through it, okay. They went through it, and they had those experiences. If somebody didn't go through it, to sit down and to take a look and see that it's only been painful, it's only been difficult, so the person is taking a look at the price that's been paid. Now, any good salesman understands that if you're going to examine, you're only going to look at the price. I'm going to show you something, I'm going to say, this is $500. $500. Who's got $500? But look at this thing. This thing is not just $500. This thing is the last one you have to buy for the rest of your life. Right? Oh, for the rest of your life. You have to stretch the payments out over the course of the next, a good salesman is going to break down the payments. We're talking about not even a cup of coffee a week for the rest of your life. That's it. Oh, really? And if it ever breaks, you can always return it. Oh, really? That's okay. You'll start to seem worth it after a while. And you don't have to pay it all at once. You can break it down in incremental payments. Oh, okay. Now the pain doesn't seem so bad. The price doesn't seem so high. And now I know what it is that I'm getting. If a person doesn't know what it is that he's getting, then any price is too high. And if a person understands in Yiddishkeit what it is that he's getting, then no price is too high. So it's a hockey sheet of hit him in his mouth and drive him away. Tell him, you don't want to be a part of Jewish history? Don't be a part of Jewish history. You don't want to be a part of it? The door is open. Once you open that door in that direction, then he comes running back. He says, no, I also want to be a part of Jewish history. Every time they bring up the subject, me, Yehudi. And Eretz Yisrael, I'm not saying it should be brought up. I'm saying how it should be brought up. But every time it's brought up, it's interesting to observe how many secular Jewish American people get crazy. They say, I want my kids to be in Israel too, you know. And I want them to be accepted over there, and I want them to be absorbed as citizens, and I want them to be Jewish. Oh, you want your children to be Jewish. Suddenly you want to be Jewish. Suddenly you feel like you want to be part of the equation, you want to be part of the picture, so they ask a smart question. Don't come here and give lectures. Don't try to kick the legs of the table and knock over the four cups over here. Then be productive part. And live as if there's a tomorrow today. That's what you got to do. That's what it means. The Haki Hashim, I've always thought, man, you know, the teeth look like they're very tough on the outside. You get this tough enamel. Teeth. Right? Shin Rishoyim Shibarta. Right? We didn't get to that typical tale, but David Amel says, break the teeth of the wicked. Teeth look like they're tough on the outside. But you go to the dentist, and you just go one little millimeter, right, beneath the surface over there. Yeah. Without the Novocaine, forget about it. We're all toast. We all turn into jelly bean soup. Forget about it. Because then the person, he got a raw nerve over there. The minute you hit that raw nerve, you know, you don't want to be a part of Jewish history. If you didn't want to be a part of it, you wouldn't have been a part of it to this day, and you wouldn't be a part of it in the future anyway. We have a common history, but we don't have a common destiny. I'm sorry, my friend. Me and my kids are not going to... That's right. Oh, boy. You know? So now suddenly, you've touched the raw nerve, and hopefully the person, if you push him away with the left, he comes close with the right. Tell him there's other things to look at. You're only looking at the price. You're not looking at the merchandise. Right? Take a look at the merchandise. They said a Russian fellow came to Yiddishkeit. And he said that his whole life he was being beaten up because he's a Jew. You know, and even though he accepted communism, he thought that communism was going to be the cure, but they wrote Jid on his passport. He couldn't get into this, he couldn't get into that. So one of my charusas said, he said his grandfather used to tell a story. There was a fellow who bought a goat. And he wanted the goat because the goat should give milk. So the goat didn't give any milk. So what a waste. He wasted money, $2 zuzin, yeah, on a goat, and the goat didn't give any milk. And then a disease came that was killing all the goats, and his goat died. And he said, look at this. When it came to being a goat to give milk, he says, it doesn't give milk. When it comes to a disease to kill goats, suddenly he's a goat, right? So I don't have the benefit of the goat. I only have the downside of the goat. If a person's only experiencing the downside of Yiddishkeit, they're not experiencing the upside, so of course they're going to feel rejected from it. So come and take a look at the upside, and you'll feel like you'll want to belong. You'll make yourself want to belong. So there's a cure for him also. And now we take a look and we ask the simple one. The one who doesn't know but he wants to know. He wants to find out a little bit. He wants to open up his eyes. So what does he ask? He asks a general question. He says, Mazos. He says, what is all this about? And how do we intone the question, Manish Tana Halayla Azeb, for him? And over there we can ask the question very, very simply. And maybe this is the most intelligent way that we can understand it ourselves. If we're not a chacham so thirsty, on fire, and brand for knowledge, and we're not so bitter that we want to reject and we want to push the whole thing away. But maybe there's another way. Just take a look at it simply. And wonder to ourselves and wonder out loud and say, Mazos, what is it? What is it? Manish tana halayla zeh mikol halalos. Is there something different? Is there something about this night that's different from all other nights? Is there something about this night? There's something happening over here. Why are we here tonight? Why not some other night? It's an amazing thing. And I spoke to some secular American high school kids today, yesterday. And I mentioned this question, a simple question. What is it? Why are we sitting here in this night? Does anybody remember what they ate for breakfast 2 days ago? Right? Unless you eat the same thing for breakfast, hard to remember 2 days ago. The further you get away from a physical thing, I heard Lubavitcher Rebbe say many years ago, he says one of the simonim, one of the signs of neshama, he was talking on the yurt site, he says the further you get away from a physical thing, the further it fades out of your mind. What you ate for breakfast this morning? It's strawberries and cream, it's very, you know, with some sweet and low on top, and then I'm on a diet, you know, and I'm cutting down on my carbs, so I remember what I had for breakfast this morning. It was geschmack. What I had for breakfast a week ago, I can't remember. It's getting further away. It's it's more dissipated from my memory because it was a physical thing. What I ate for lunch a year ago? A year ago for lunch. A year ago, lunch. Who remembers what they ate a year ago for lunch? It's gone. He says, not so when it comes to neshama. He says, even though grandma passed away 15 years ago, so when she passed away, so I don't see her face, I don't see her eyes anymore, but somehow the message of who great-grandpa was or who grandma was comes more clear to us, becomes more focused, becomes more real. They can have a greater impact on us as we get further from them because it was a contact of neshama. It wasn't just a contact of physicality. It wasn't just eyes and nails and eyelashes. It was something more deeper, something eternal there. So I can't remember what I had for lunch yesterday or 2 days ago. But we're sitting there in Pesach night. What do you think we ate last year? On Pesach night, we can ask ourselves, what did we eat last year? Remember Pesach night last year? Remember what you ate? Of course, we're eating matzahs. We're eating marrow. What were we eating 10 years ago at the Pesach Seder? On that night, on that same night, what were we eating? We're eating matzahs. What was our great-great-grandfathers eating 400 years ago in Poland or in Spain or in Russia? What were they eating back then? What were they eating? They were eating matzahs. We'll go back 1700 years. They were sitting in Babylon someplace or North Africa. What were they eating over there? They were eating matzahs. And they were eating maror. And I can tell you what they weren't eating. They weren't eating a bagel with cream cheese. They weren't eating Wonder Bread. Because the Torah says over there, if the person eats these things, he gets cut off. It's finished. He becomes extinct from the Jewish people. He steps out of this flow, out of what's happening. He steps out of the Pesach Seder. He steps out of the order of history. He's gone. It's finished. So Manish Tanaha, Laila Hazeh, what's happening on this night? What is the power of this night? What's the compelling power of this night? Manish Tanaha, Laila Hazeh, Mikol Halilos. Why is this night so important from all other nights? That a whole family gets together. We never get together. Unless it's a funeral or a wedding. And it's in the middle of the week. And we're all sitting on the same page and we're all learning something together. When's the last time the whole family opened up a book and read the same book together? When did that ever happen? Manishtana halayla hazem, he called halaylos. It's in the middle of the NCAA finals, right? Whatever it is. And it's tax season. Right? And still, the Pesach Seder, you can't move it to another night, you can't move it to let's move it to Thursday, let's back it up to the third Thursday in April. And nobody can tinker with it, nobody can play with it, and yet everybody's going to come to this night. Why this night? Manishtana halayla hazem, ikol halilos. Why this night more than all other nights? What's the compulsion of this night? What's the force? What's the attraction of this night? So when we take a look and we say, who are the Jewish people today on this night? Let's expand the question even more. Who are the Jewish people? So we imagine that there's 14 million Jewish people in the world. That's not the Jewish people. That's not all of the Jewish people. Rav Shimon Schwab said an unbelievable idea. I'm going to say something slightly different also. He said, we say in the Haggadah, he said, B'chol dor v'dor, in every generation, Chayav Adam liros es atmo kiilu, who yasim in the shrine, the person is obligated to see himself like he went out of its shrine. So how do you see yourself like you went out of its shrine? How can I see myself like I went out of Mitzrayim? I didn't go out of Mitzrayim. It happened 3,315 years ago. Then here we're going around in a circle. We come back to the same night. It's not just a long highway looking back 3,315 years ago. We're back in the same place on the same night. We're not commemorating something that happened a long time ago. We're re-experiencing. We're reliving. We're back in the same place that this thing happened. So Schwab says like this. He says, you know, based upon scientific knowledge, we understand that the cells of the person's body rotate out every 7 years or so. Yeah? You realize that? I mean, every 7 years, every cell in your body has been expelled from your system. That's an unbelievable concept over there. That means after 14 years, that means you're twice not the same person anymore. I think except for the brain cells. It's peculiar, the brain cells. So if you think about it for a second, can you imagine somebody trying to legally break out of a contract or something? You know, you want to get out of the mortgage without any consequences to your credit. So it's 21 years. You say, listen, I can't pay it. I'm just going to let it go. But I don't want any credit consequences. I'm going to say, you know, it's not me. The person who signed those papers 21 years ago, his cells have rotated out three times already. It's three times, not me. So I'm out of here. Person is married 35 years later. He says, my cells have changed five times, and so have hers. It's not the man I married. It's not the woman I married. That's it. It's over. And someone's going to get, and they're going to give him a pass? No. He said he made a legal bond, and he did something 35 years ago that pulled him into this relationship, that anchors him into this relationship. You can't get out by saying that the cells have changed around me. It's you. Of course it's you. We can't deal with a legal system that doesn't respect the idea that you're not the cells. It's you. There's a core you. And therefore, Rav Shimon Schwab said, he says, it's not you. It's not different. It's not like the Jewish people back then got out 3,500 years ago. That was us. The Hisham, the Lano, this has stood for us. This has stood for all of our generations. The whole door to door. In every generation, it's us. It's us. It's just that back then, it was a different configuration of cells. But that was us. Like, you take a look at your baby pictures when you were little, and say, oh, that was me. And here's me at my bar mitzvah. And here I am standing on the chuppah. And here I am at my son's bar mitzvah. Those were all me. That baby picture is me. That's me when I was young, and I only had 3 trillion cells. And then here I am, 60 trillion cells, cooperative cells. But it's still me. And therefore, when we committed ourselves by Har Sinai, when a person made a commitment to something, that was a commitment that we made. That's who we are. That's the Jewish people. And therefore, we get a little older. We got a little bit, here I am, a little bit grayer. Here we are, a little bit more spread out. It's not the Moshe Rabbeinu cell and the Miriam and the Aaron, but it's still us. It's still us. So it hasn't changed. We've changed a little bit in our configuration. We're maybe a little bit more spread out, a little bit. We look a little bit different, a little bit wild. We don't look like our wedding photo. But it's still us. That's what he says, the whole door of the door. And maybe even along with that, we have an idea. If you take a look at the 14 million Jews that are in the world today, let's say it's the tops of, you know, 14 million separate little Jews, let's line them all up. Let's line everybody up. Like the tops of little trees, little sticks that are sticking out of the top of a tree. Very nice, very beautiful. And then on Pesach night, without any central authority, like a little tap of the wand, suddenly all these little separate little people, Jews and the Jews and the knees and the Jews, spread out all over the planet, in North America, in South America, in Israel, in the Far East, in the Far West, California, Brooklyn, you name it, suddenly everybody, well, with the orchestrated leader just sort of tapping the wand, everybody sits down at the Pesach Seder, opens up the Haggadah, we all turn to the same page at the same time, and then we begin to look back into our past. Mitchila of the Avodah Zorah, Hayu Avoseinu, in the beginning our ancestors were idol worshippers. Now suddenly you go back and said, and then Avram Avinu broke away. Ah, Avram Avinu. We look back, we go down all the roots of all the generations on the same night, and we go back through all the different avenues of trees and branches to the root, to the common trunk, and to the common root, until we get down to the bottom. And we get down to the seed. And then we see the seed was Abraham, became Yitzchak, became Yaakov, and Yaakov became this three-ply cord. It's a chut meshulish. And that became, this is the DNA of the Jewish people, got planted, and it went down 70 to Mitzrayim, and this little fetus now became 600,000. And this 600,000 now stepped out onto the stage of history. Some of it became bathwater through the process of the 10 plagues, and some of it became the baby himself. And then he stood by Har Sinai, and we had a bris, and we had a covenant with the Kodesh Baruch Hu that we keep until this very day. And that's the Jewish people. And then we find up at that time that the Kodesh Baruch Hu, with Avraham Avinu, he made a promise. And that promise was that Gam Dan, it's a goy, I'm also going to judge that nation. Rashi says also means I'm also going to judge also the future nations. And we lift up the cup at the beginning of the Pesach Seder. We say the hisham the lavasein of Alano, that this is stood for us for all generations. Shalom echad bilvad amen aleinu lachaloseinu. Not only one has come to destroy us. Elisha bechol dor vador omdim aleinu lachaloseinu. They're standing to destroy us. They've declared war against us in every generation. For HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzi leinu miyadam, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu saves us from their hands. And that promise of protectorship, that promise of being saved, begins to wash up from the beginning, from the original promise. It begins to come up and flow through the xylem and phylum, through the sap of the trees, until it catches up with us. And at the end of the Pesach Seder, we say, that's what happened back then. And here we are now, in Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, as it washes over us, suddenly we're propelled into the future with the same promise that protected our ancestors. V'hi sha'am da'la v'sein v'lanu. Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, we begin to call out, we begin to feel a connectedness, not just with the past, but a connectedness, we find ourselves in the present, and we're washed into the future. Suddenly we're taking one big step forward to the future. And that's the Jewish people. And therefore, if the Russia excludes himself, or if the child excludes himself, or if he sees himself as an isolate, on this particular night, he separated himself from the body of Klal Yisrael, and from the promise that protects Klal Yisrael. It's a night for us to be together as Klal Yisrael. The whole Jewish nation simultaneously is doing this exercise, my friends. It's not just me, we're here for Pesach, I'm sitting in my house, I'm doing it in my house. And you're doing it in your house. And these ones are at a hotel, I'm going to be at a hotel also. But everybody's doing it simultaneously all over the world, and we're all taking one giant step forward, Lashana Haba B'Yerushalayim, based upon this. And that's why somebody eats a bagel on Pesach. It says Karis. The person, the Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't come and cut the person off. It's not this punishing type of a thing. The Torah comes to tell us, Kinei Hashem Rofecha, the doctor comes to tell this person who's got diabetes, that if you eat sugar, it's gonna damage you. So don't eat sugar. It's gonna cause you a hyperglycemic reaction. It's gonna the insulin, the penicillin. It's gonna whatever it's gonna be. Don't do it. So the person says, so eat sugar. He comes back to the doctor. Why'd you do that to me, doctor? When I got sick and I had to cut off a limb. Why'd you do it to me, doctor? I didn't do it. I told you not to do it. You told me if I do it, then that's gonna be the result. Now look what happened to me. See, I didn't tell you. I told you not to do it because if you do it, then that's what's gonna happen to you. So the Chiddush HaRim says, because a person gets cut off for eating chametz on Pesach, we can infer what the reward is 500 times for not eating chametz on Pesach and eating matzah on Pesach. Because if the punishment is being cut off, what's the opposite of being cut off? You get connected. A person gets connected on Pesach. The idea of Pesach is to be connected. And therefore, it's not like a person standing there with his fingers holding on to the edge of a tall building and a Kodesh Baruch Hu says, you ate bagels, you know. I'm stepping on the toes. Well, you're stepping on my toes, on your fingers, and one lets go, the other, you fall off. They'll cut you off. He didn't cut us off. The person isolated himself, and because he isolated himself, so he missed out. He missed the plane. He was sitting there reading the newspaper and saying, last flight. He's now leaving for Yerushalayim. Last call. We're waiting for customer, such and such, such and such. Please come on board. And he's sitting there turning Glamour Matthew. Looking in the candelabra and wondering if anybody likes me, if I'm loved, if I'm... The little chometz has now blinded the person. They can't see. The chometz is closed up the person. When the person closes their eyes, they don't see themselves. They don't see anybody else. They only see themselves. And then this night, the whole eye opens up. And that's what the Bali Musa say. Rabbi Eliyahu Lapian said, the soul is like the eye. If you put a little dust into it, it closes up. But if a person can open up his eye, this night we're like an incubator. And we open up and we take a look into the deep past. And from the looking into the mirror of the deep past, we can actually see all the images that are going to come into the future. It's a giant mirror of the Haggadah. And if we can see far enough into the past, then we can see far enough into the future. If the person can't see the past, if he thinks that Judaism, Yiddishkeit started with Yiddish theater on the Lower East Side, then it ends with an intermarriage at Leonard's, you know, in 2005. Between two male doctors, you know. If he thinks that our connection with Eretz Israel started with UN Resolution 242 in 1948, then it ends in Oslo, and it ends over here, and it ends over there, in 1990 this, and in 2000 what? Because you can't see 2 feet behind you, you can't see 1 foot in front of you. It's myopic. It's chametz. But if a person catches the whole purview, catches the whole view, the whole overview of history, the Jewish history, they said it was one great Rebbe, one great Hasidic Rebbe, that came to the Pesach Seder, he came to... And his Talmidim asked him, they asked him around Pesach time, he had just come to Eretz Israel, they asked him, do you like being in Israel? He says, oh, I love being in Israel. And they said, he says, you know, the weather's a little bit different, the culture's a little bit different. He says, but they have one expression I like very much. And they said, what's that, Rebbe? He said, Hakol B'Seder. Right? Everybody says Hakol B'Seder. Of course, when the Israeli says it, he means cool your heels, the check is in the mail, it's not your business, bug off, you know, I'm first in line, step out of my way, you know, whatever it means over there. It's a, the colloquial expression. But when he heard it with his innocent ears, he heard it means Hakol B'Seder. Number one, everything is in order. Everything's okay. From that little view, from ground zero, from ground, from the floor and the street level of New York City, you think it's a madhouse. Metal and flesh. Buses running into trucks and bicyclists and, you know, you're dodging all kinds of different scenes. I used to go visit this guy in the 77th floor of the Empire State Building. I used to wait out in the lobby. I'd look out the window from one window, and there was another window looking out in a whole other direction. And the whole city looked like, as the sun was setting, looked like a motherboard. It was so organized. You see the light turning green all the way up the avenue. And you look down on the street, you see these little people running around over there, and the buses and everything flowing. And so you can put it to music. Bum, 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 bum. Even the bus running into the bicyclist. Da-da-da, shh, you know, with the gear, you know. You can also put that to music also. It's also part of the, from some grand high place, we can begin to see that Hakol B'Seder, that everything is in order. And the other meaning is Hakol B'Seder, that everything is in the Seder night. Everything is in the opportunity that the Seder night offers. If a person misses out on Seder night, he missed out. If he missed the plane, it's not like, okay, I could always walk to Israel. Okay, start walking to Israel. There's a plane that just left, and you just missed the plane. If you missed it by an inch, you missed it by a mile, you missed it. And if you're on board, if you're able to catch that view and able to open up your eye and see that grand sweep of history washing over you, and then to be a part of it in that river, to be pushed forward by the wave of promise that was given to Avraham Avinu and through every generation, should behold over the door. So then we got something out of the Pesach Seder. That's why it's unfortunate the poor fellow who sits over there and he thinks that Manishtana Halayla Azeh means that it's just a recital. And it's something that we say, tradition. Boom, 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 boom. Right? Like we're a bunch of dancing bears and we only do it because they did it and they said it because we said it, and there's nothing, there's no real meaning, there's no real intonation to the question except something that the little child recites innocently. And therefore, we meant to ask ourselves, we just finished up very briefly, what's this whole business we said that Lot was eating matzah on Pesach 401 years before there was ever a Pesach? What was that about? Right? And he served matzahs to the Malachim that came. And the answer is that Pesach is a reality. Right? I remember during the Gulf War, the previous Gulf War, I don't know how many people remember, they were launching Scud missiles, 39 Scud missiles landed in Eretz Israel. And everybody's heart was in their stomach. They didn't know what was going to be in those, people wearing masks, little children putting on masks and being sealed into rooms. My friends, when they recall it, they can't stop crying. Everybody called a relative after they heard about this one or that one to find out if everybody's okay. Baruch Hashem. Little, no damage. Baruch Hashem. The Chazei Hashem. And then, the day that the war ended, there was one Jew sitting in Bnei Brak, Reb Chaim Kanievsky. He's the biggest Talmud scholar on the planet. I'm sure everybody must have heard of Reb Chaim Kanievsky. So he's sitting right in the line of fire over there. He wasn't sitting on Ocean Parkway or something someplace. He's sitting right in the line of fire. People came to him with a serious question. Rebbe, if we wear the gas masks, they're ineffective with beards. Should we shave off our beards? Or should put on the gas masks? Now, a beard is only a custom, you know? A person can be a ben olam haba. You can get into olam haba without a beard, right? My wife doesn't have a beard, right? The Ramchal doesn't have a beard. I didn't have a beard. A lot of people, great people, didn't have beards. You can get into, Rav Moshe Sherrod never had a beard, right? So he could be a good Jew without a beard. So it's a question of saving a life. Pikuach nefesh, you can break Shabbos. So they came to him with a serious question, should we put on the gas masks? Turn on the end, the gas masks were ineffectual also. But at that time they came to him with assuming that they were effective, so then what's the shaila? Shave off the beard. He chuckled, he sat on the porch where rockets on their way to Tel Aviv and on their way, you know, came overhead, and he said, on Purim you wear your masks. That's what he said. It wasn't understood until 4 days before the end of the war. There was a ground war that started after pounding and pounding and pounding of that crazy man's Saddam. And all of a sudden, from the ground war, suddenly, uncle, he gave up. And when did the war end? I don't know how many people are here old enough to remember, but the war ended on Tainus Esther. And that night, people didn't have a chance to go out and to buy their Esther and their Mordechai costumes and all their, you know, all their fun stuff. They didn't have a chance to go in the attic and take down. They were too busy living under the terror, living under the sword of Damocles. So people went up into the attic. They didn't go into the attic. They took out what they had at hand, and they went out in the street and they danced. The minute they heard that the war was over, and they went out and they danced in the streets, and guess what the most popular costume was that people danced in the street with? Was? the gas masks. And the tzaddik said, he says, on Purim you'll wear your masks. And they went out and they danced. They got a chill through my body. They went out and they danced on Purim with their masks. And you can imagine, let's say there was never such, you know, we only heard there was a custom of something called Purim, some light, you know, thing where Jews wore masks. There's an Indian of masks on Purim. Right? And then this holiday happened, and somehow the Rabbanim were the Masakin that just to celebrate every year after that the miracle, so we're gonna go out and we're gonna wear these masks and we're gonna dance in the street. And someone remembers, you know, there's some historical memory of people wearing masks on the day. Isn't that interesting? That exactly on the day that we wear masks, suddenly the history should dovetail and should work out that masks should become important on this day. So the truth is that there's something Manishana Halayla Zeh is really to come as an arrow to say that there's something important about this day. It's not just something, a commemorative event, but there's a reality to this day. It's a reality. That Lot got out, Lot escaped, just like the Bnei Israel escaped. That means there's a window that's going to open on Pesach, and Pesach means that a person can jump out, they can find themselves on one moment inside the wall of the prison, and the next moment they're outside of the walls of the prison. Pesach, when the wall opens. And this is the key, the matzah is the key that opens up the prison door, and suddenly you're out. And if a person has too much chometz in them, they can't squeeze through the opening, they can't get out, and they're stuck, and they're left behind with Lot's wife and Lot's children and everything else that happened in Mitzrayim. Because chometz is a reality, and matzah is a reality, and the Torah comes to orient us towards reality. Manishtana halayla zeh, mikol halalot. Is there something peculiar, is there something unusual, is there something amazing about this night? And that's why one great philosopher once said, that's why we bother to get the kids to ask the question, because one great philosopher once said, there's nothing more irrelevant than the answer to a question that was never asked. Life is the answer to what question? Love is the answer to what question? Children is the answer to what question? The Haggadah is the answer to what question? You can't leave it without a question. But to the extent that a person learns to ask a question and answer the question, to the extent that person asks the question, that's the extent that the answer now becomes relevant. When a person asks Manish Tana Halayla Zeh with a certain intonation, then there's an answer that's going to come resonating back to that person. If a person doesn't ask the question, then the whole night loses its value, the import is lost. It becomes a tradition type of a thing. So therefore, we look inside of ourselves with all these different four sons and all these different four attitudes, and we try to bring out one of these types of questions. We try to bring out, hopefully, the Shaila of the Chacham. There's not the Shaila of the Chacham. The next positive one to emulate is the Shaila of the Tam, and ask ourselves and try to investigate. Manish Tana Halayla Zeh, there's something important about this night. To the extent that we answer the question, ask the question, that's the extent that Hashem will receive an answer. We'll have an opportunity to take one step further. Mashana Habab Yerushalayim.